The title of my address today, as you may have seen in the magazine that was published, is Beauty, Goodness, and Truth. Although I think the correct order probably should be goodness, truth, and beauty, but I chose to put beauty first because I think it's the more accessible word and a word that's less open to abuse than the words goodness and truth. Today, I'd like to reflect on those words in the context of my own spiritual pilgrimage or life journey, which will hopefully make me a little less of a stranger in front of you as I speak to you today. And so I begin this address going back to the year 1999. As a young 24-year-old, in my first year of ministry as a Methodist minister in the Methodist Church of Southern Africa. It was just 5 years after the first democratic elections of 1994. Nelson Mandela had just passed the baton on to his successor, Thabo Mbeki, who became president. And there was a real sense still of hope for change with the ending of apartheid. As part of the Methodist Church's program to embrace and facilitate the process of reconciliation in the country and the church itself, they had begun placing many of their new ministers in cross-cultural appointments so that we could begin to bridge the divide, the cultural divide, the racial divide, after decades of racial segregation in the country. And so in my first year of ministry, I was sent to Soweto, the largest African township in the country, just southwest of Johannesburg. It was both exciting and challenging. Exciting because it felt like I was playing my part, however small, in building a new South Africa. Challenging, because I was thrown into the midst of another culture that was so different from my own and surrounded by a variety of languages that I did not speak or understand. Challenging also because I was brought face to face with levels of poverty I'd never seen or experienced before. It had always been kept somewhat at a distance. About 2 or 3 months into that year, the senior minister I was working under assigned me to lead a Wednesday night healing service at one of the churches deep in the township. And after some beautiful and moving hymn singing, in which the congregation of about 50 people swayed and danced in true African style, Bible readings were read, and a short sermon was delivered by myself. And then opportunity was given for people to come forward for prayers for healing. Now, this was a first for me. And as I descended the pulpit, feeling a little anxious about what would happen next, pews were shuffled around, and very soon I found myself sitting in front of a row of possibly 20 to 30 people, all seeking prayer. The majority of them were young mothers with their little babies strapped to their backs or sitting on their knees. And as I listened to each one of them with the help of a translator, a common theme began to be expressed by almost all of them. I'm unemployed. We don't have enough money at home. Please pray for me that I will be able to get a job. I'm unemployed. We don't have enough money at home. Please pray that I will be able to get a job. I left that service quite shaken that day, filled with questions and a gnawing doubt. Even while listening and praying for each of those 20 or 30 people who had come up for prayer, I found myself questioning in the midst of it how on earth my prayer would make any difference in their lives. Questioning how on earth my prayers would miraculously get jobs for each of those who had come up in a country that had one of the highest unemployment rates in the world and where the very structure of the economy was working against them. It was a kind of a shattering experience, and in that moment I found that whatever had remained of my naive Sunday school faith, which had already been deeply challenged by 4 years of theological study, I found it collapsing around me. Who or what was God? How was God at work in the world? What difference, if any, did my prayers make? A few days later, I remember writing a letter to my parents, and in that letter I expressed something of the inner struggles I was facing, and I remember writing the following words: "I don't know what I believe anymore, but I know that I still believe in goodness, beauty, and truth." I'm not exactly sure where those words came from, because at that time I had not heard of the three transcendentals in my theological studies. It was only later that I came to read that those three words are known in philosophy and scholastic theology as the transcendentals, the good, the true, and the beautiful. Some philosophers and theologians would add a few extra transcendentals to the list. And philosophically speaking, the good, the true, and the beautiful were regarded as the transcendentals because they were said to transcend our ordinary experience of form in this world. And yet at the same time, everything in this ordinary world of form was understood in some way to be expressions of the good, the true, and the beautiful. Now, I'm not an expert in the philosophy of the transcendentals, but it was helpful for me to discover later on that those three words that I identified in 1999 as being somehow essential to my own personal value system and faith, that they have a deep and venerable history in the realm of philosophy, going right back to the time of Plato, and as pointing to the essential nature of the divine, or reality itself. But for me, it felt like I'd stumbled upon those words accidentally and intuitively, as I'd found myself flailing about as a young minister, struggling to make sense of my faith, my calling, and my vocation. Goodness, truth, and beauty. At the time, I never tried to define those words. My engagement with them was more at a visceral and intuitive level. But they became three essential words that helped me to continue as a Christian minister when I found myself doubting almost everything else. They became like a touchstone to me, a tool for spiritual discernment, a bit like the breadcrumbs in the story of Hans and Gretel. They became like little clues with which I could navigate myself back home, wherever home was. And as a Christian minister, as I reflected on the life of Jesus in the Gospels, in many of those stories, I felt that I could still discern something of the good, the true, and the beautiful, perhaps in some stories more brightly than in others, but there nonetheless. Now, before coming here to preach today, I listened to quite a number of the addresses that I'd found on the Dublin Unitarian website. And I found there a wonderful array of really thought-provoking reflections on a wide variety of topics, challenging topics, reflections on the possibility of reincarnation, reflections on the migrant crisis facing Europe and Ireland, reflections on the changing nature of sexual mores in a post-Christian society. And there was also a challenging reflection entitled, Can We Trust the New Testament? In which Dr. Martin Pulbrook raised important and challenging questions about the historicity of the New Testament. I'd have to agree with him. There are major question marks that surround the historical details of the Gospels. If the New Testament cannot be trusted from a historical perspective, what value, if any, remains in it, one might ask? And my own answer to that question lies in part in those three words, goodness, truth, and beauty. If there is any value in the New Testament, then its value exists to the extent that it is able to point us in the direction of goodness, truth, and beauty. Truth not in the sense of absolute propositions or doctrines that are then proclaimed to be the infallible truth, but rather intimations and archetypal stories that have the ability to inspire us to become true, wholesome, good, and beautiful human beings. I think, for example, of the story of Jesus and the woman caught in adultery and Jesus' incisive and compassionate response, let the one who has no sin cast the first stone. It's a moving story because the Jesus whom it depicts embodies and radiates a deep sense of the good, the true, and the beautiful. Even if there emerged some final proof that Jesus never in fact existed, the beauty, goodness, and truth of that story would remain, and it would still be able to inspire us to become compassionate, more compassionate human beings. Going back to 1999, a few months after that shattering experience, leading that healing service, I was out shopping and I found myself drawn into a bargain bookshop. I imagine there might be a few here who have been drawn into bargain bookshops before. And there in that bookshop, I found a copy of a book by the Vietnamese Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh entitled The Heart of the Buddha's Teaching. Paging through it, even in the shop, I knew I had found a treasure because almost immediately I could discern signs within it of the same goodness, beauty, and truth that I could see and discern in the stories and the teachings of Jesus. And as I arrived back at the youth center in Soweto where I was living, as I got out the car, it felt like my heart was expanding with joy and gratitude as I soaked in the beauty of the blue sky and the clouds above me. And so I discovered that those three words had given me a set of intuitive tools which enabled me to read and appreciate the writings and the scriptures of other faiths too, the Hindu Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, the Chinese Tao Te Ching, which soon became a favorite, and the many Buddhist writings and scriptures. It's something that Unitarians have known for a large part of their history, that the scriptures of other faiths also have value to the extent that they can inspire us and move us and expand our hearts, helping us to become ever more deeply true, wholesome, good, beautiful human beings. In closing, I offer you three quotes from Khalil Gibran that might invite us to reflect a little more deeply on each of those words. On goodness, he writes, "In your longing for your giant self lies your goodness. And that longing is in all of you." On truth, he writes, "Say not, I have found the truth, but rather, I have found a truth. Say not, I have found the path of the soul. Say rather, I have met the soul walking upon my path." And on beauty, as we read earlier, he writes, "Beauty is life. When life unveils her holy face, but you are life, and you are the veil. Beauty is eternity gazing at itself in the mirror, but you are eternity, and you are the mirror."